Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair and broadcasting once again from the Gene Bosch studio on the magical isle of Vashon, voice of Vashon, 101.9 on the FM band, at all of probably about 5 watts, and streaming live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. It is my pleasure to be able to report my safe return from a very extensive journey to the East Coast, and I am also pleased to report that all of the things that I had wanted to accomplish on that trip did in fact get accomplished, plus one particularly poignant and significant addition, which I had not counted on. So my greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Stockholm, Kingdom of Sweden on the other, of which Stockholm is the capital, and to Reston, Virginia in between, because by a great coincidence, my Stockholm family all journeyed to Dulles, IAD on the airline code, IAD on the airline code, and sent me a signal while I was on my travels, and we were able to match up as I was en route to Dulles to make my return journey. And so to Karen and to the good doctor and professor and all of his family, it was lovely to see you, and it was something that I had not expected, and was particularly happy that we were able to make it work out. On the binnacle list today, my heart is breaking with all of the children who are not only at risk, but certainly some have been lost in the now ongoing war in the Ukraine. Children, of course, are our legacy, our next generations, our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. When they are gone, they cannot be replaced. It is beyond my understanding how politicians, how military people in the world can think in terms of such short-sightedness that they don't think of the terrible tragedies that arise. I remember very clearly going ashore in Vietnam when we first arrived there. It was right around the February Tet Offensive, and we went ashore, and I went ashore in Da Nang. And there were refugee children there who were part of the tragedy that was the Vietnam War and that is every war. These kids don't get paid. That's not their job to fight in these wars that mankind imposes upon itself. And it is just heartbreaking to me to put thousands and thousands of children on the binnacle list today. Also, all of Captain Joe's people who are suffering in one way or another, those of you who are suffering and know what you need to do in order to make yourself better and to get off of the binnacle list, it is my wish and my desire and my command that you will do all of those things so that you can begin again to make your contribution to the world in which we live, and that in particular take care of those people for whom you are responsible. As you know, I always close this broadcast with that wish and that desire and that command from the captain's chair. I have got to make a comment about the bravery of Zelensky in the Ukraine. I've talked a lot on this broadcast about one of my guiding principles, that is that the captain shall show no fear. That doesn't mean that the captain isn't afraid. It means that he doesn't communicate that fear to those for whom he's responsible and accountable, because when he does, or should he do that, then the whole organization will collapse. You all know that I do not get into politics, except occasionally island politics, and particularly when those island politics have with them a somewhat occasional comic part to them. And I'm not going to do it here, neither the politics nor the operations of that particular war. I'm just going to comment on the bravery. I watched Zelensky this morning give an interview, and clearly he is, first of all, he has remained in his captain's chair. He's up where his people can see him and rally around him. He has got to be a target. And now we know his family is a target. And yet he is where his duty calls him, and so a bravo Zulu to a leader that is showing what leadership is, how it should work, and I just think that he is exemplifying those qualities and those characteristics that we always hope for and we always want to see in our leaders. In marine traffic this morning, there is a very unusual little ship in the anchorage right off of Captain's Quarters. Her name is the motor vessel Billesbjorg. Billesbjorg. She's under the Liberian flag, although in her lifetime she has also been under the Singapore flag and the Panamanian flag. And she's interesting because, first of all, she's not very big. She is about maybe 450 feet long. But the other interesting characteristic about her is that she can load and unload herself. She has these cranes on deck where she can pick up containers and put them on her deck, or she can unload herself, which means that she is designed and built to go into ports where there are none of the large cranes like we have in the Port of Tacoma, the Port of Seattle, the Port of Long Beach, where large container ships like Evergreen Given, the ship that went thwartships around the Suez Canal, the Evergreen Given cannot load and unload herself. She needs those big cranes, and she needs the services of longshoremen to load and unload her. This particular ship, though, can load and unload herself, and she is, I've never seen her before, so she is a new ship for me. She's headed for the Port of Tacoma, and interestingly enough, as we have talked about before, should she be in any kind of a marine accident, a collision or an allision? Allision, of course, is a ship hitting a fixed object like a bridge abutment. Is that she is owned by she's under the Liberian flag. She's owned by a Danish company. She is insured, I believe, in a British company, built in China. Her engine is a German engine, but it is built under license from an American company, Caterpillar. Very, very interesting little ship. And she's been out there now for, I arrived back in Captain's Quarters last night from SeaTac. And to find, by the way, that Sailor has still not yet returned. And so she's been there at least for a day. And this morning she had her hatch covers up, which tells me that maybe she's getting ready to move. The Bonhomme Richard, one of my touchstone ships, not only because of her name, which goes back to the beginning of our republic, but also because of her tragic loss. her the convening authority for her chain of command, a three-star, Navy three-star, has decided to convene a general court-martial in the case of the young seaman who is now being listed and shown as a seaman recruit, an E-1, as low down as you can get. And he has been charged with hazarding a vessel, and that is an extremely serious offense. In wartime, it could be a capital offense. And he is being charged with that. But so far, there have not been any charges brought against the commanding officer. The commanding officer, I find now, has indeed been relieved, along with his XO and along with the chief of the boat, his senior enlisted advisor. But this young seaman is has been charged with hazarding the vessel, and is, unless a plea agreement can be worked out between his defense counsel and with the convening authority, this Navy three-star, that in which he will plead guilty in return for a reduced sentence, he will go to trial. And my guess is that his defense is going to mount a reasonable doubt defense. In other words, that there will be discussions in the trial as to whether or not there is a reasonable doubt, since he's pleaded not guilty, a reasonable doubt that he indeed did in fact start this fire. In the larger sense, though, and we talk about this, and I talk about it a lot because I've spent a lot of time in command myself, and I recognize the total and absolute responsibility that a commanding officer, a captain, has for his command, for not only the ship, but for all the people that sail in him. And one of the things for which he was relieved was that that crew had not been properly trained, and they had not drilled at what training they did have at dealing with fires that happen in a shipyard. The ship wasn't even in a shipyard. She was in a naval station. A naval station is usually not organized the same as a shipyard is for combating fires in the shipboard environment. I will continue to report on this because this whole business of command responsibility is so important to me, and it is a principle by which I have lived my entire working life. Not always as successfully as I should have, but it has always been a guiding principle that the commanding officer, the captain, is totally responsible for everything that happens in his command, and he certainly bears some responsibility for the fact that even if this young sailor did, in a period of being leaked off at the Navy, decide that he was going to get some sort of retribution, that if that ship had been properly organized and the firefighting organization had gone to work immediately, that probably she could have been saved. Now she's being scrapped. I hope that her name is going to be assigned to another worthy ship. Tonight is the night for what we now call the State of the Union Address. It is a constitutionally required report for us military people, our commander-in-chief, to report to the Congress. Over the centuries of our republic, this has evolved into a political event. And it has its own political theater, its own ceremonial. It has a lot of spring budding up, people getting up and applauding, and people sitting down, and people turning their heads away, and all of that stuff. But this one is, every State of the Union address is important. This one, of course, is particularly important because the Commander-in-Chief is going to address the issue of war in Europe. The challenges that are in front of us as a nation, the challenges of us as a nation showing some level of unity and setting aside some of our political differences is there for us to accept. I fear that we will not have that acceptance, but in any case, I am urging all hands to listen to what our Commander-in-Chief has to say about what is going on in Europe. Interestingly enough, this is also causing some unexpected unity in the European Union. And it remains to be seen how all of that is going to play out. But the address to Congress, which is required by the Constitution, now called the State of the Union Address by the President to the people that he leads, all of that happens tonight, and I urge all hands to take the time to listen to what he has to say, regardless of what your particular political persuasion is, what your closely held feelings are politically. I urge you to listen to what he has to say. And if the opportunity presents itself for you to reach out and touch fingertips with someone of the opposing political thoughts, I urge you to do that as well. In another, along with the Marine tragedy of Bonhomme Richard, Bonnie Dick, is Felicity Ace. And I'm using Felicity Ace as a metaphor for what is happening in particular in Europe. Felicity Ace is the ship that almost 2 weeks ago caught on fire off of the Azores. She's a carrier of motor cars, and motor car carriers are particularly top-heavy ships. We've talked about not only the fact that they stack vehicles, motor cars, up several decks, as many as five decks, but they also have a very flat slab sides, and which is called windage. And so she caught on fire. She burned off of the. She burned for a number of days. Her crew was evacuated, and the Smit towing company, that Dutch towing company, the example of high-speed towings by the Dutch company Smit, put a crew aboard, and they were attempting to get her under tow. In the meantime, they were fighting the fire, and today, on the 1st of March, which would have been my father's birthday, by the way. And she rolled over and sank. She sank today. About 200 nautical miles off of the Azores. And she carried to the bottom with her about 2,200 tons of fuel and about 2,000 tons of other kinds of oil. Down in the tanks, down on the bottom. So I'm using her death as a metaphor for what's happening in Europe. What happened here is that she almost certainly, and no marine investigation has yet been published, it's way too early for that, but what I believe happened here was that an enormous amount of firefighting water was put into her, that her drainage system, her scupper system, was not efficient enough to drain it all out, and she collected too much topside, rolled over on her side, on her starboard side, we know, and then just kept on going. So she's down at the bottom. I don't know what the water depth is. She certainly, almost certainly, cannot be recovered. But in any case, she's down on the bottom with about 4,000 tons of petroleum products in her. Almost inevitably, as the corrosion process works at the bottom, some of that stuff is going to start to leak out. And then somebody's going to have to figure out, how do we go down and get it? Do we bring the hull back up? Or do we go down and try to take suction on the tanks while she's on the bottom? As I do with other cases in which I'm interested, in which I hope you're interested, because not only are they cases of interest in themselves, but they often are metaphorical in the sense that they are examples to us of how we do not deal as well as we could or as well as we should with important things. So, Felicity Ace, I think you were probably not treated as well as you should by the people to whom you belong, and I'm sorry that you are gone. I grieve for every ship, just as do I grieve even more so for every one of Captain Joe's people who are family or who are shipmates or who are friends of family rank who leave us before your time. The Suez Canal, you remember the Suez Canal, which was where Evergreen Given got herself thwartships across the south end of the canal. And the Suez Canal has decided to raise tolls by about 10%. So I became interested in how much does it cost for a ship to go through the Panama Canal. And I did a little bit of research on it, not enough to actually make the calculations myself. But one of the sources that I was able to plug into said that an average toll is just under $500,000 U.S. That's average. So that means that a ship like Evergreen Given paid a lot more than that. And small ships like the Billis Borg would pay quite a bit less. But that the average for all of the ships that transited divided into the total amount of tolls collected comes up with just under $500,000. And the toll authority is going to raise the tolls by about 10%. So, in further information about the locks, about the canal, this is a no-lock canal. The water level at the Red Sea and the water level in the Med are roughly the same, and therefore there may be a little bit of a current through the canal. I've never been through the Suez Canal myself. I'm a Panama Canal person myself, and a St. Lawrence Seaway person myself, and a Locks in the Sioux person myself. Never been through the Suez Canal. So I don't know how difficult a pilotage problem it is, but I will say that in my further research that it takes about between 11 and 16 hours for there to be a transit. The canal is owned by Egypt. It was dug by Ferdinand de Lesseps, and after he did the Suez Canal, he began a cut into the Panama Canal, but never completed that. It remained for the United States to build the Panama Canal. So that's your information today on the Suez Canal, and Evergreen Given paid a hefty fine in order to be out from under that particular accident that in which, once again, the captain has to be totally accountable for that, regardless of whatever information or advice he got from his pilot. So tonight is not only State of the Union address night, but tomorrow is Ash Wednesday. And I have taken it on myself to give a little bit of religious explanation. I am a non-practicing Roman Catholic. I was born in the church. I'm what's called cradle Catholic. And so I'm very familiar with the traditions which are associated with Ash Wednesday. And when you are out and about, let's say over on the mainland or even here on the magical Isle of Vashon, and you see one of your friends has a gray smudge in the middle of his forehead. That smudge was put there by a religious practitioner, a priest in the Roman Catholic Church, and a minister, if it's one of the denominations that observes the custom of putting ashes on the forehead. So that's where that came from. And so then the logical question is, well, Captain Joe, where do those ashes come from? And the answer to that is that on Palm Sunday of the previous year, when the palms are distributed to the faithful in recognition of the of Jesus' march into Jerusalem and was heralded by people waving palms, and we recognize that today with Palm Sunday and the distribution of palms, and palms that are left over are burned, and the ashes from those palms are what are used to anoint the foreheads of people who come to Ash Wednesday Sunday. And the purpose of the ashes is to remind us that all of us are mortal and that we are, in fact, going to return to the dust or ashes of life. So that's the answer to no doubt hundreds, thousands of questions from Captain Joe's people about Ash Wednesday, where the ashes come from and the significance of them. And it is not only Roman Catholic, RC, but I know that a number of other Christian denominations also follow that particular tradition, that particular custom. The purpose of my trip was to do something that has become very important to me, and that is to go and see family, to see friends of family rank, to see shipmates who, in my perception anyway, may be coming close to their last voyage. So the first stop that I made was in Norfolk, which is across the Elizabeth River from Portsmouth, which is where I started out as XO in the Coast Guard Cutter Ingham en route to Vietnam. And there were several of my shipmates who I had gotten the impression that may well have been on their last voyage, and I felt that it was important for me to see them while it was still possible to see them, not to put too fine a point on it. And so when I arrived at the meeting place, there were four of us who were shipmates together. And notwithstanding the impression that I had, none of the four of us are on our last voyage, so great relief there. Maybe just a little bit bent, maybe using canes, maybe not me, not your captain. Maybe a little bit creaky in the joints, and maybe a little bit more conscious of their own mortality than they were the last time that we got together. But it was, in fact, a very positive and very enjoyable time that we had together. So for Tom and for Josh and for Mark, all of us sitting at this table in a restaurant in Norfolk, remembering shipmates who are indeed no longer with us, including our captain. So this captain's not going anywhere for a long time. I don't know, I can't define the term long, but the first stop was to see shipmates that I had the idea that maybe I would not see them again, and I remain confident that now I will. The same thing is true of several friends of family rank, and it was the first time that my two sisters and I had been able to be together for a number of years. So the purpose of the trip was in particular to see people who either have not been able to or will not be able to come and be here since Mary R. died. And I was able to do all of those things, and for that I am enormously grateful to the United Airlines and for all of the people who worked with me to make this happen. And I have now come up yet once again and all too soon on the last minute. And so it remains then for me to, from the captain's chair, to remind all of Captain Joe's people, and especially those who are responsible for other people, that this is your time, not the time to lie back on the hawser, but for you to take care of those for whom you are responsible and accountable. And I will be with you again live, as always, from the captain's chair next week. And with that, I am saying that I am here on station watching properly. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again.